Hey, it's Anna Sale, and I want to thank you for listening to Death, Sex, and Money, where I explore the big questions and hard choices that are often left out of polite conversation. You can hear new episodes ad-free every week on Amazon Music, where you can find Death, Sex, and Money and all of your Slate favorites without the ads.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
You think everyone does this. This is just sort of one of those first rites of passage of parenthood that you have to go through. So it never, of course, crossed my mind that anything could go terribly wrong.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
You're not worth $300.
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
Love. Yeah, what is that?
And need to talk about more.
Death is just a part of life. Something we're all destined to do.
I'm Anna Sale.
I remember when we were pregnant with Carl, we had a total sense of innocence about everything. And then I remember, you know, when Carl was born, I was taking a whole bunch of pictures at that time because I thought, how is it that everything looks so beautiful? I was totally high. And it's been really hard to get as excited this time.
This is Lee Towndrow. He and his partner Amber Scora live in Brooklyn.
I think we feel a little bit like, I don't want to say cynical, but...
I feel like there's a loss of meaning. Like Carl's, everything about the pregnancy and your first child, it just infuses your life with so much meaning. And that, I think, is the hardest part. It's just, if life feels sort of meaningless, like if your greatest treasure can be taken away for no reason that you can understand, because ultimately the only thing, when I boil it down, when I can come down to why Carl died, it was just, Lee always says, it's just like we were the unlucky ones. It was just like really, sometimes some random thing goes wrong and you don't know why and you can't explain it.
I met Amber and Lee at their apartment last February. At the time, Amber and I were both about 6 months pregnant. Amber gave birth to her first child, Carl, in 2015.
What's Carl's full name?
Carl Ives Scora Towndrow. It's a big, long name for a little baby.
What do you think of when you think about when he arrived in those first days of learning how to be a mom?
When Carl was born, when they put him on my chest, the very first thing he did was he craned his neck up, and I didn't even know newborns could lift their heads like that yet, and he looked right into my eyes twice, and I remember feeling stunned.
I remember having this feeling where I wanted to almost consume his body. Like I wanted to lean down and hug him and just be able to absorb him into my body.
it was the most connected I'd ever felt to another human being. And as Carl got a little bit older, there was these moments where sometimes he would catch my eye and stare at me, and he would lock eyes. And then it was almost to the point where he would look at me so long and with so much love in his eyes that I'd almost start to blush, or it felt like, but like better than the best lover's gaze that went on way too long in a movie. But this was like your child, and he's just looking at you because you knew that sort of you were his everything, and I could tell he felt really safe with me, and that also made me feel really happy.
After Carl was born, Amber took 3 months of paid maternity leave from her job. But as the time drew near to return to work, she didn't feel ready to go back. Lee was working freelance, and they couldn't afford for him to stop working. And Amber couldn't quit her job because their family depended on her health insurance. She asked the head of her HR at work about her options. There weren't many.
The only suggestion he said he could give me was to take all my vacation days that I had accrued, and that that would be allowed before I had to go back. So I did that.
Carl was just shy of 4 months old when Amber and Lee dropped him off for the first time at a daycare center close to Amber's work in Lower Manhattan.
And of course, it felt really surreal and strange to leave him. But once I took him out of the baby carrier, one of the daycare assistants, one of the Spanish-speaking ladies, came over and went up to his face and smiled and said, hola. And Carl just gave this big, radiant smile. So I thought, I felt really reassured. I thought, oh, he's going to have a little adventure here, and I'll be back before he knows it. I went to work. I got there around just after 9:30, I think. And the whole morning consisted of just nothing. I mean, it kills me now because it just seems so fruitless and ridiculous. But, you know, it's your first day back at work after months off, and like the computer doesn't work, and you're calling IT support. And then by the time it got close to noon, I had told the daycare operator I would come back between 12 and 12:30. And so I waited until like 12:10, and then I just couldn't wait anymore. I was too excited to go see him. When I got to the daycare, I thought it was strange, but the downstairs door was open because it was on the second floor. I thought, why would the door be open when there's children inside? And so then I went around the corner, still having no idea that anything was wrong, and I just saw Carl laying on the change table, and the daycare owner was performing CPR on him. And it's such a PTSD kind of thing. Like, I replay that moment over and over in my mind, but even to this day, I try to like reconnect what I thought I would be seeing with what I saw, and I can't ever really wrap my mind around how I could have seen that. I mean, there's no words to kind of explain the turmoil, the mental turmoil of that.
Amber ran over and tried to help the daycare owner perform CPR. Carl's lips were blue. The EMTs arrived soon after. They took Carl and Amber to the hospital. Lee met them there.
I think they tried to resuscitate him for about 2 hours.
Even though they're trying to revive him, they let me hold on to his foot. But it was, they tried for so long, and like I just knew that they're just doing it for us, basically, at this point, so that we knew that they tried.
What time was it?
I don't even know. Like, I have no idea of concept of time.
We were at the hospital a total of about 8 or 9 hours. Most of that time was spent. We sat with Carl after he was pronounced dead. And so that was most of the time that I can't even really remember.
When you were sitting with him after he'd been pronounced dead, what did you do?
I held him like for all that time. Basically, we took turns holding him, and it's like a weird thing because I felt like as long as I can hold him, I can handle this or something. So we just kept holding him. But I have to say, I appreciate the hospital staff so much because they didn't rush us. They were really supportive. Whatever we needed, they gave. And the nurses, like, at the end when we, before we left, one of the nurses was going off shift, so she came to say goodbye, and I showed her a picture that I had taken of Carl that morning, just in his diaper before we had left for the daycare. And I mean, he just looks like the happiest, jolliest picture of a healthy baby. And I just said, oh, I just want to show you a picture of Carl so that you know, like, how he really looks. And then she got tears and started to cry too. It was a really kind moment.
What do you understand now about what happened to Carl?
I don't understand much. I have, like, for the last, you know, months and months and months, my mind, I don't think there's probably a minute in the day where I'm not thinking about some aspect or some trying to understand or trying to figure out or blaming myself or feeling guilty or mourning over what Carl lost. But yeah, for all of the obsessing and using all the powers of my mind, my brain to think about this all day long, I can't understand to this day why he died. It makes no sense to me. You feel like there's this direct correlation between you leaving them and them dying. Like, how could you not feel that way when it was the first time that you had left them? And as a mother, I started to go through every scenario thinking, my mind would just race, because your mind is racing. You need an answer. As a human being, you need an answer for death. At least you need to, even if you can't understand death, you need to understand why a death occurred.
After several weeks of waiting, the medical examiner's report came back. It said that the cause of Carl's death was undetermined. Amber says the daycare provider told her that Carl wasn't distressed before he died. He'd been put down for a nap. A daycare worker who later checked on him found that he wasn't breathing. Police did find that the daycare center wasn't licensed and that the daycare provider was not certified in CPR, although she'd claimed to be. The daycare center was closed down permanently a day after Carl died. Coming up, Lee and Amber talk about the days and weeks following Carl's death and about making the decision to have another baby.
I find myself continuing to think, like, okay, we'll just get through this period and then we'll have Carl again. And then I realize, like, no, we're not going to have Carl again. And my mind keeps processing that information over and over again.
Hey everyone, this is Katie Bishop, producer of Death, Sex, and Money. As you may or may not know, Anna is out on maternity leave at the moment, but she'll be checking in again in the coming weeks, so tune in for that. Last summer, around this time, we put out our episode about siblings and the very complicated feelings that we have about them. If you haven't heard that episode, you can find it in your podcast feed or at deathsexmoney.org. We've been reaching out to some of the people who we featured in that episode to find out what's happened in their lives and in their sibling relationships in the past year. One of those people is Alex Sugarman. Anna talked with Alex and her twin sister Katie in the episode. And then, weeks after the episode came out, Katie died unexpectedly.
If you want to know what it's like to have the worst day of your life and the best day of your life separated by about 11 months, that's pretty much what this year has been like for me.
Alex got married in June. She sent in this update a few days ago.
Planning a wedding while you're grieving is, in retrospect, probably a pretty bad idea because the planning process was kind of nightmarish. And I think that planning a wedding while you're grieving kind of offers this really confusing outlet for all the pain that comes with grief. But when we got to the actual wedding, there was just so much joy and so much beauty and so much love. And it felt really healing to just have that much joy kind of heaped on us and heaped on our family.
You can hear more updates on the siblings that we featured in our episode by signing up for our newsletter. We'll include those updates in next Wednesday's edition. Sign up at deathsexmoney.org/newsletter. On our next episode,
when I want it badly enough, I can really steel myself and just be like, don't freak out. Just stay still. Kiss them. Just do it.
When Anna first interviewed writer Katie Haney 2 years ago, Katie was really freaked out about dating. When we talked with her again more recently, a lot had changed.
I remember being on the subway and looking around at all the guys and being like, I don't want to date any of you.
Let me tell you a good story. It was late on a Sunday afternoon, and my family and I had been away and rolled into the driveway, and everyone was worn out from traveling and getting hangry. But waiting for us was a solution. A Hungry Root box filled with healthy, grabbable snacks and a few different dinner meals to choose from. We tore into this thing like a pack of wild animals and ate all the snacks. But they were healthy, whole ingredients, fresh produce. And then we were set for dinner a few hours later, which only took about 15 minutes to prep and cook and get on the table. I was so grateful to my past self for doing my current self this solid by ordering this box. And it was easy. I took a short quiz to tell Hungry Root what kinds of meat my family eats, the sorts of flavors we like, any dietary restrictions we have, or just things we're trying to avoid, and when I wanted the box to be delivered. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Death, Sex, and Money listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/DSM to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/DSM. And don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Do you ever feel like there's nothing new in the news? You know there are urgent things happening in the world around you, but all you hear is noise. That's why we made What Next. Our goal is to tell you the stories you haven't heard before, or maybe a different side to the story you thought you already knew all about. I'm Mary Harris, the host of What Next. And I love my job because it helps me cut through the noise of the news. And then I get to bring it to you. Together, we can figure out what next.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home. And you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Dakota Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. Thanks. This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. On the night that Carl died, Amber and Lee didn't go back to their apartment. Their friends got them a hotel room. They stayed there and then moved to another friend's apartment for several weeks.
It was particularly difficult to just imagine re-entering the house. And it just felt like a weird sort of museum frozen in time, like the sheets that Carl slept on, or like this, you know, his bib with puke on it. Like everything to me was just, I couldn't bear the thought of it.
And I made a couple of trips back to the apartment to get things, to just try to, I think, water plants and, I don't know, hold things down.
Did you make the baby things less conspicuous before you came back?
No. Well, yes and no. There were some things that some baby things I put away. I mean, Amber and I talked about what things we wanted to leave out.
I was scared to go back, but then I also kind of wanted everything to stay intact. I know I've met other people since this happened that had a baby die, and I know a lot of them kept the baby's room exactly how it was. And I think that before this had happened, I probably would have found that maybe surprising, or maybe thought that was strange. But now I can understand exactly why people do that because it's all you have and of them. Like, you have no, of course you have all your memories, but it's the one physical manifestation that you have of them.
When you think about your relationship in the weeks and then months after Carl died, were you mirroring each other's emotions, or were you feeling different things at different points in your grief?
We were feeling different things at different points.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone grieves differently, and then I think a mother will grieve differently than a father. I mean, at the very beginning, one of the really difficult things as a woman having been living with, like, Carl was like an appendage, even just breastfeeding, and like suddenly your baby's not there and your body's still producing milk. Like, I felt like my body had been like torn apart, like something had been torn off of me, even physically. But for Lee, the grief, I think, was just as intense, but in different ways.
For me, it was like the first week or two was total shock and adrenaline. Like, I just thought, I have to try to get things back in order. So I was just trying to kind of take care of all of the practical issues.
In those first few weeks after their son's death, Amber and Lee were also dealing with a lot of media attention. As the daycare center where Carl died was being investigated, the story was everywhere, from Gawker to the Daily Mail.
Like, it felt like the whole city knew that our baby had died in a matter of a day or so. And all of a sudden, I felt like my personal life had just been blown wide open. And so I wanted to try to I felt a lot of pressure to reassure everybody that it's going to be okay. So that's the mode that I snapped into. And I went back to work really fast because I was terrified that I would have some kind of scarlet letter. And I remember kind of feeling like I had to just postpone grief. And it was really hard. We had two. We each started seeing a grief counselor right after, and that was so helpful. Because it allowed, at least, I mean, I can say in my case, it allowed me an outlet to talk about these things that I was going through. And so for me, the grieving almost happened like in January. Like, I just didn't really see any friends or do anything. And I just felt so depressed and awful.
You just ran out
of
energy.
Yeah.
When did you have a conversation about trying to get pregnant again?
I mean, it was days after Carl died.
I was like, I have to have another baby. I mean, at the beginning, it was just like, I would do anything to have Carl back at that point. And then you're like, I can't control anything about this situation, but the only thing I can control is that maybe I can have another child.
I hadn't really thought about how when you lose a child so young, how it makes perfect rational sense that your impulse is to get pregnant again, to have another newborn.
Yeah.
Is that something that you, like, is that something that grief counselors know about, like, have talked with you about? Is that a phenomenon that happens?
From as far as the other women I know that have lost children, right now, two of the women that I knew that lost children at the same time as me are also pregnant now. And all of us have gone through the exact same emotions, like wanting a baby really badly, getting pregnant, and then being like putting on the brakes and being like, oh my goodness, like, I don't even know if I should be doing this. And I'm crying all the time because the pregnancy hormones intensify the feelings of grief, which I guess I should have known, but I didn't really think about. And then initially, I think because you don't know this child yet, you just can't help but feel, I keep just thinking I want Carl back, and then knowing it's not Carl, and then feeling guilty that I seem to only want this one child. Of course, I know logically when the baby, the baby comes out and you meet them, it's not going to, you're going to love them just as much. Everyone knows that. But, I mean, I don't know how you describe the emotions of grief. I mean, they're just like this blanket that just smothers you. But what I have heard from women who have been through this and then went on to have other children, they all said that it never, ever fills the hole that you have from losing the one that you did lose. But a little bit of the sadness is taken away because at least you have a baby to hold at the beginning. Like, even if it's just that, that's something.
Do you know the sex of the baby?
Yeah, it's a girl.
How did it feel to find that out?
That was hard because both Lee and I think, wanted a boy. There's just this longing to somehow have something of what was lost.
Like Amber, I think we thought, oh, we're going to have another baby and it'll be like we have Carl back, or sort of like some aspect of his essence. And so then I thought maybe it's good that she's a girl, and then it's very clear that it's a completely distinct thing.
Do you think you'll handle parental leave differently with this birth?
Yeah, I mean, well, one thing is that the work situation has changed a little bit for me. I am the one with healthcare now, so I have it for the whole family. And yeah, I definitely want to try to make sure that for at least for a year that Amber can be taking care of Carl, either with with the new baby. It's hard. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the main things that we talk about all the time is how are we going to handle this differently.
Have you thought about how you'll tell your daughter about your son?
Yeah, I've thought about that, but I think that I kind of feel like nothing will change from how we are now, because Lee and I just talk about Carl all the time. And even with my friends, I talk about Carl and memories or like just whatever I'm thinking about Carl. So I can't imagine it being any different with her, and she'll know what happened. But I don't think it'll be something we hide from her or shield her from, because I kind of think that that's unfair. I mean, it's a fairly sad thing, but it's part of her family history and part of just what becomes a light, her own life story. Of course, I want her to think of Carl as her big brother.
That's Amber Scora and her partner, Lee Toundrow. Carl's little sister was born in June. Her name is Sevi. She has a full head of dark hair, just like Carl. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios. The team includes Katie Bishop, Chester Jesus Soria, Emily Botine, and Andrew Dunn. Our interns are Carson Frame and Brandy Gonzalez. The Reverend John Delore and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale. The show is at Death, Sex, Money. If you've experienced the loss of an infant or a pregnancy and are looking for help, visit nationalshare.org. It's an organization that supports and connects those who are grieving the loss of pregnancies and young children. Since Carl's death, Amber and Lee have become advocates for paid parental leave. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, only 12% of people working in the private sector currently have access to it. Amber says that although she was part of that small percentage, she still feels very connected to the issue.
Obviously, ours is a worst-case scenario. It's a nightmare for any parent, and it's not going to happen to most parents. But if a parent doesn't feel ready, the parent should not be forced to drop their kid off at a daycare and go to work at such a young age. At least I wouldn't be wondering what happened or not knowing what Carl went through in the last minutes of his life.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.